Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. My name is Corey Fleck and I'm your host for the weekend show and your host throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and also on our podcast, Corlin Economics Report. This was another very busy week full of company updates, a couple more company introductions that I provided, as well as a lot of commentary on some of the market moves. We did have a Fed meeting, not a whole lot came out of that Fed meeting. But the story that really took charge and took hold of all the media sources and quite frankly had almost anybody following the markets and even those people who don't follow the markets talking about it was this move in GameStop. Now, the stock went absolutely crazy this week, really at the tail end of the prior week. It started to move and it's all moving because of, I guess, these new online traders, a new group of retail traders that are using social media and using this Reddit forum, Wall Street Bets, to really catch some of these large hedge funds and large institutions, especially the short sellers, off on a lot of their short bets. It's one of these data points that is really changing markets right now. So I am kicking off the show with Jesse Felder. He is the founder and editor of the Felder Report. Jesse, I want to spend some time talking about this new market dynamic. There's a lot to dive into here, but please give us your just initial thoughts on how this market is changing, all thanks to social media and now the ability of a bunch of retail traders, millions of retail traders, investing a lot of their money all together at the same time.
Well, it's a new trend for us, but this is something that's happened to markets during almost every mania that we've seen. If you go back to the dot-com mania, we saw, day traders taking over the market and sending, stock prices to the moon, just like we're seeing today. I think, the more apt description that I've seen is it's sort of like the trusts back in the 20s that would collaborate and to intentionally manipulate, create a buying pool to manipulate stock prices higher. Another good, metaphor that I've heard my friend Peter Atwater has called these flash mobs with money. And, if we think back to, 10, 15 years ago, flash mobs were a thing where people would say, they on Facebook or whatever, they'd get together and say, hey, let's show up here and we will all, do X, Y, and Z right at the same time. It'll be a hugely surprising thing. That will be kind of, fun. We're seeing the flash mobs essentially migrate to the stock market, where you have a coordinated pool of buyers who have realized that if they coordinate their buying power and use the most highly leveraged vehicles possible, which are short dated out of the money call options, that they can manipulate prices higher. We saw it in Tesla last year. A lot of the reason Tesla went up 1,000% or whatever last year was that we had an insane amount of call buying every week in these weekly call options. And what it does, and we've talked about this before, Corey, over the last few months, is that it forces the dealers, the option dealers, to go buy underlying common stock. So if you're going to go buy call options that are literally trading at 2, 3, 4, 5 cents per contract, you're going to go force market makers, and you buy them in great enough size, you're going to go force these dealers or market makers to go buy in the underlying stock in major size. And so that's what we're seeing in GameStop. We're seeing massive call buying volumes in the stock that's forcing the dealers to go buy the common stock and squeeze these hedge funds that, in the case of GameStop, have sold short 140% of the float. And so it's, that's how you get a stock that goes up 4,000 or 5,000% you know, in less than a year, as you see, without any real fundamental change to its business. It's just these synthetic or structural things that are going on beneath the market surface.
Yeah, it's just crazy. It's a different market, though, isn't it? Because there's been some analysis done on this Reddit board, this Wall Street Bets. And you can argue that Wall Street Bets is the top 20 global hedge fund. It has almost 3 million followers. These followers apparently have around $6,000. That equates to almost $18 billion. And this isn't like a normal hedge fund where they diversify their bets. This is a lot of money going into one bet for a short period of time. Now, the argument has been that, well, this is manipulation. But in all fairness, for these retail investors, they can argue that the markets have been manipulated by these big hedge funds because they have been the ones that have the money. And now it's a coordinated event instead of from one or two hedge funds, from millions of people pushing these hedge funds into making bets or taking off bets that they have already made. Where do you stand on that argument? Which one's at fault here? Is this truly changing the market dynamics?
I think it has changed the market dynamic for a period of time. But, you know, Arthur Levitt, who's the former chairman of the SEC, wrote a piece for Bloomberg today saying, you know, the SEC is probably already looking into this and there's a lot that they can do to prevent this type of manipulation. And, you know, I'll say that, I absolutely sympathize with a lot of these buyers at Wall Street Bets. I mean, I think there's a lot in common. You know, with these people feeling, you know, disenfranchised that, you know, Wall Street got away with murder during the great financial crisis, was never held to account, and Main Street was, you know, left to bear the brunt of the economic consequences. And now there's this feeling that, you know, this is essentially, you know, I was mentioning flash mobs a minute ago. And part of those flash mobs we saw after the great financial crisis was, you know, like Occupy Wall Street, people coordinating and saying, we are not going to let these guys get away with this. And, you know, there was really nothing that they can do. And so this is almost like, in my mind, Occupy Wall Street 2.0, where they, you know, a lot of these people are saying, look, we are not able to express ourselves politically. We're not able to rectify the situation in terms of wealth inequality and all these other issues that are driving people up the wall. So, hey, you know what? I can't blame them for saying we're going to punish these hedge funds. You know, we're going to get back at Wall Street in a way that we've found we're able to. And, you know, so the sentiment behind it is absolutely understandable. And it is true. I do believe that a lot of these hedge funds were, in fact, manipulating a lot of these share prices lower. GameStop traded, you know, at 3x cash flow. Bed Bath & Beyond is one that I've talked about on your show for at least the past year. Got down to $3-4 a share before hitting, you know, 50 this week as part of this dynamic. And, you know, a lot of that, the reason why these stocks got so cheap was because these hedge funds were just pushing so hard on the short side. When you get, you know, 80% of the float in Bed Bath was sold short, 140% in GameStop. And so, you know, clearly the only players in these stocks at, you know, back in March of this year were the short sellers. And so they were absolutely pushing prices way too low. But now we're seeing the opposite, which is, you know, prices being, you know, there's no reason why GameStop should be more valuable than Etsy and, you know, a lot of these other companies that are actually their businesses, you know, are actually doing phenomenally well. GameStop is a struggling retailer.
So now you mentioned the SEC looking into maybe what they could do to limit some of this wild action. But you look back to after the crash in March, one of the reasons why the market has moved up so much is because of all these new retail traders, all these essentially services that offer you free trades like Robinhood, no commission trades. That has helped bring a lot of liquidity into this market. Now it's starting to, I guess, burn some of these bigger players. What do you think the SEC could do by attacking these retail traders, but not just turning this whole market over?
Well, I mean, that's the risk, right, is that they do turn this market over in the process. Because if you look at a lot of these, the broader market, to me, one of the things that I've been watching with this trend, the trend to see when this market is going to start to look exhausted is, one, risk appetites. There's a variety of indicators we can look at, but outside of these handful of short stocks, a lot risk appetites, Bitcoin is a good one, right? Bitcoin rolled over, fell 25% recently. But you can see the dollar starting to rise. Lots of signs of kind of risk off are appearing. At the same time, we're seeing breadth really deteriorate in the stock market. I mean, outside of the retail sector, you're seeing every other cyclical sector start to significantly underperform, which is, a real dramatic change from what we've seen since March of last year when, I'm talking about industrials, transports, a lot of these really important cyclical sectors have done, really outperformed to the upside. They've all rolled over in the last couple of weeks, which, you could take that as potentially an economic signal in the short run. But it's also, to me, a signal of breadth. The number of new highs within the index has been falling off the last few days. So there are signs that the broader market is susceptible to a rolling over here. But if you were to take really damage risk appetites by coming after some of this manipulation, yeah, you would definitely, I think you could see some serious repercussions, and not just a correction, but another crash in the stock market. And if you want to look at parallels, go back and look at Tokyo Joe. Everybody can go Google Tokyo Joe. Was a very prominent, stock pusher, kind of a pump and dump type of player in the stock market in the late 90s, who, got sued by the SEC very near the top of the market in late 99, I think was the time, December 99, perhaps, when the SEC sued this guy for illegally pumping up stock prices. And so there's a possibility that I would bet, there's better than even odds that there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on right now. Essentially, people buying a stock and then pumping it on a place like Wall Street Bets, watching the stock soar and then selling their shares. And that is not legal. It's also not legal to explicitly manipulate share prices higher. Absolutely legal to say, I'm bullish on this stock, and my opinion is that the stock price is going higher, and I encourage you to buy it. That's all legal. But it's not legal to coordinate buyers in an effort to push prices higher for no other purpose.
Okay. Yeah, no, I get that argument. But what about, because this coordination all happens out in the open, online, on these boards, and the fact that some of the reasons why these guys are pushing certain stocks is because they see such a large short interest. So they're saying, here's our opportunity. I'm buying here. You guys should buy here. It's just a new way, I guess, to pump these stocks, but it does seem like there's a lot more people winning and a lot fewer people losing. Those people more being, at least right now, the hedge funds. I realize this is a moving target. It's dangerous to say who's winning and who's losing, because I'm sure there's some greasy people making a lot of money here, but it's turning this market on the head. And I feel like there is this larger population that is saying, good for you guys for taking it to some of these bankers.
Absolutely. And like I said, I absolutely sympathize. And I was on the same side of the trade in a lot of these cases. I mean, I own stock, like I said, stocks like Bed Bath & Beyond until this week. Mesa Rich is another one I probably talked about on your show, which is a big mall operator, which, stock is up 100% in the last, week or so as part of this, because they had such high short interest. And that was actually part of my, I've written about this, part of my case for owning these stocks. To be clear, I never anticipated at all that we would see the type of action that we've seen. But I did write about Bed Bath & Beyond back in April that if we were to see 80% of the float was sold short, if we were to start seeing shorts having to cover, the stock wouldn't double or triple. It would go up a lot more than that. And you know, it's up tenfold since March, April last year. So I absolutely see the trade, and you know, see what they're seeing and sympathize with the sentiment behind it. But like I said, the difference is, and this is a really fine line, you know, in terms of being able what you can legally prosecute. The difference is, we've seen it time and time again in the markets, whether it's cornering the silver market to manipulate prices higher, you know, back in the 70s, or it's, you know, Tokyo Joe pump and dump scheme, or when you were explicitly, I guess, putting together funds and investors in order to manipulate prices without any other motive. To me, that clearly crosses the line. That's just my opinion. I'm not a legal scholar, but you know, it's one thing to be an investor, say the stock is cheap and these other dynamics could make the stock price go higher. It's another thing to say, we know nothing about the company, but we are going to jump on this bandwagon to manipulate the price higher.
Yeah, fair enough. We see all the shorts. Come on, guys, let's get in here and do it. It's just crazy when you think about how much money is actually behind this simple Reddit blog. It's mind-boggling to think, and that's why you're getting some of these moves.
Yeah, and you have to also recognize that, hey, let's say there is, you know, the $12 billion or whatever, you know, there to be invested. Let's say only, you know, 10% of that goes after one of these trades. You get, you know, $1 billion. Well, that's not that much in the scheme of the stock market. But when you're buying these out of the money call options that expire in a day or two, you get so much leverage. They're leveraging that $1 billion into, you know, tens of billions of dollars in buying power. So it's actually, you know, I mean, my hat's off to them, because they have figured out how to essentially be the most powerful force in the stock market today. There's nothing else that has anywhere near the kind of sway in the markets right now as these buying pools.
Yeah, it's just wild. And even on top of GameStop, we're seeing AMC move higher. We're seeing Nokia scream higher too. This is happening on a number of different stocks, and it's happening right in front of everybody on the internet, on these public forums. So very, very interesting to see. Jesse, let's look at the broad averages, though. I am hearing a lot from my analysts that, look, these markets are overextended. We can look at sentiment levels. We can look at valuation levels. They are all at extremes or at very bullish, overly bullish levels. But these markets do seem to just have this money rotating within them into sector to sector. How do you view the overall health of the markets currently?
Well, you know, I would just point out also, perhaps the craziest stock that I've seen is Blockbuster in bankruptcy is up 5,000% in the last 2 days.
Yeah, this is crazy.
Crazy doesn't even begin to explain it. But in terms of the broad market, yes, this is the most overvalued stock market of all time. By the valuation measures I look at, whether it's the Buffett yardstick, you know, market cap to GDP, anything similar to that, you're seeing valuations today that are so far above the dot-com mania peak and even above the 1929 stock market peak, that to me, that, you know, there are two messages from that. One is forward returns. We've pulled forward all the returns from the future. Buying stocks today might mean you make no money for 10, even 20 years. But the other side of that is the risk reward equation. So that's the reward side. The risk side is stocks would have to fall 70% or so today just to go back to average historical valuations. That not to get cheap, but just to go back to average, we'd have to have a 70% decline. So pair that kind of fundamental setup with sentiment, which, like you said, is off the charts. You only see this type of manic, euphoric buying in the stock market at the very tail end of a very long bull market. You know, Jeremy Grantham came out recently and said this type of action that we're seeing right now is usually consistent with the final couple of months of a stock market mania. This isn't, you know, something that'll go on for a couple more years. This is the crescendo. This is the final blow off. And, you know, technically, I mentioned a little bit earlier, I'm seeing a number of exhaustion signals. DMARC indicators is something that, you know, I use over multiple time frames. I'm seeing a lot of weekly cell signals and even quarterly and annual cell signals on the NASDAQ 100, the S&P 500, for example, which to me suggest the uptrends from on a number of time frames. You could go on, like, you know, go back to the uptrend that goes back to March of last year, or the uptrend that goes back, you know, to, you know, the early 2019, late 2018 lows, or even the uptrend that goes back to the 2009 low. A lot of these uptrends are technically showing signs of exhaustion. And on a much shorter term scale, we see signs of risk appetites reversing and breadth, a lot of breadth measures starting to suggest the rally is getting really tired and vulnerable.
So what does a correction or crash look like for you? Do you think we could go through another crash, maybe not to the same degree as we saw in March? Or do you think it will be more of a gradual pullback, a bit more level-headed pullback, I guess?
Obviously, there's no real way of knowing. I will say, though, that when these types of speculative manias unwind, you see things like the NASDAQ going down 80% plus over a 2-3 year time period. You see the 1929 stock market crash, which was, you know, when these things unwind, they're just as breathtaking on the downside as they are on the upside. And to me, maybe the best way to describe this market is you just pull out your Edwards and McGee technical analysis of stock charts, the Bible for technical analysts, and you look up what is this pattern that goes back to early 18. What does this look like? We've had a peak in 18. We had the VIX blow up, the short VIX blow up, sell off. Then you had another rally to new highs. Then you had the third and fourth quarter sell off in 18. Now you've had a new rally to new highs, and then you had the pandemic crash. And now we rallied to new highs again. And all that creates is a megaphone pattern or a broadening top pattern that's very, very clear on the chart. And Edwards and McGee are very clear about this. They wrote this a long time ago, that this describes a stock market that is out of control. And it's only ever seen at the tail end of a very, very long bull market. Usually what that forecasts is, prices taking out all of the lows that have preceded. So, you know, that would suggest, and I'm talking about the S&P 500 chart, that taking out the March low of last year in the S&P 500, from a technical perspective, that chart pattern suggests that's a very real possibility. And to me, when I think about what it would take to unwind, you know, what could potentially be the consequence of an unwinding of all of this speculative behavior, it doesn't seem out of the realm of possibility at all.
Yeah, crazy, isn't it? Okay, let's just wrap it up here with one sector or a couple sectors that you like long-term, trying to filter through all this crazy noise and some of these individual stock moves for the long-term investor that does care about putting money into a good sector, a couple good stocks, and riding that wave higher. Where are you seeing opportunities?
Well, you know, for several months now, I've been talking with you and your audience about energy. I still think energy probably has, and traditional energy, I'm not talking about, solar and new energy. I'm talking about oil and gas. And I do think longer term, I think there's a very good chance we could see an energy crisis over the next couple of years when demand comes back. And we've seen such a massive drop off in drilling and all these things, we're not going to be able to bring supplies back online very quickly. So once vaccines roll out, the economy reopens, we could see oil prices really, really soar. To be clear, I've taken down my long exposure to the smallest it's been since pre-pandemic. So it's probably pretty obvious that I'm not constructive on the market generally, but I do think over the long run, over the next 3 to 5 years, energy is going to be is going to go from the most hated asset class on the planet, as it was last fall, to being one of the best performing in the world. But we'll see.
All right. Hey, Jesse, great chatting with you, buddy. Boy, oh boy, just a very interesting week and very interesting for the broad markets. I hope we made some sense of what's going on. And hey, everybody, let us know what you think of all this crazy trading that has happened and how the tide, at least for right now, has turned more into some of the retail investors' hands as they have figured out some of these nuances to just absolutely scream some of these stocks higher. Jesse, it's great chatting with you. I love reading over all your stuff, and I really appreciate you taking the time on our weekend show. Have a great rest of your weekend, buddy.
Yeah, happy to do it, Corey. You too.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.